Welcome to Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic, Executive Director of Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. New Mexico's water supplies are under attack. The Martinez administration's copper rule allows copper mining companies to pollute groundwater at mine sites, a violation of the state's Water Quality Act. Water speculators are chomping at the bit to take water from rural areas and pipe it to populated urban areas. How are communities pushing back on these powerful forces to protect their water resources from contamination and to prevent impairment of rural water supplies? Joining me live via telephone to talk about these issues is Doug Micklejohn, attorney, executive director, and founder of the New Mexico Environmental Law Center, a nonprofit public interest law firm that provides free and low-cost legal services on environmental matters throughout New Mexico. Welcome, Doug Micklejohn.
Good morning, Allison. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning. And I should say before we start that you and the Law Center represent my organization, the Gila Resources Information Project, in two cases that we'll be talking about today, the Copper Rule and the Augustine Plains Ranch Water Rights Application. But before we start, Doug, can you give our listeners a bit of background on the New Mexico Environmental Law Center? I believe you founded the Law Center in 1987, and why did you create the organization, and what do you do?
Certainly, Alice, and let me just say it's a pleasure for us to be working with you on those two cases. We have found that the Gila Resources Information Project is an effective advocate for protection of water in New Mexico, particularly in the context of mining. So we're grateful for the that you make, and we're grateful for the opportunity to work with you. In 1987, I was working in the state attorney general's office, and the last 4 years that I was there, that is leading up to 1987, I was working for Attorney General Paul Bardicke, and the governor at that time was Tony Anaya. And those two officials were very interested in protecting the environment, and I did a lot of work in the Attorney General's office to protect the public lands in New Mexico, particularly the national forests and, to a lesser extent, the U.S. Bureau of Land Management lands. In 1986, the state elected a new governor, Gary Carruthers, and a new Attorney General, Hal Stratton, and doing work to protect the environment was not a priority for either of those gentlemen. For the benefit of your listeners who aren't familiar with this, the Attorney General is elected separately from the governor. And so it was apparent to me that the Attorney General's office wasn't going to continue to do work to protect those public lands. It was also apparent to me that if I wanted to continue to do that work, I had to do it somewhere else. And so I left and started the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. And it took me about 9 months sort of to put things together and to get ready to go, and I left the Attorney General's office in September of 1987 and started the Law Center.
Wow, well, great. So you all have done such tremendous work, and we're so appreciative, the Gila Resources Information Project and our community as a whole for all the work that you've done over the years representing GRIP and our community related to water quality protection from mining operations here in our county. And I'm wondering maybe if you could give us a little bit of background on just exactly what the Law Center did. So for folks who weren't around here in the late 90s, early 2000s, on the three Grant County mines, Chino, Cobre, and Tyrone, how those mines went through the Mining Act and got closure closeout permits, and the Law Center was instrumental in getting adequate closure closeout plans for these three mines. Maybe you could tell our listeners a little bit about that.
Certainly. In 1993, we and our allies were able to get through the state legislature a new mining act. It's called the New Mexico Mining Act. It governs hard rock mining, which is, generally speaking, minerals such as gold, copper, silver, molybdenum. There are some others that are covered. It does not cover coal. And that mining act established a new set of requirements for new mines and for existing mines. And the way that existing mines is defined in the act, it included the three copper mines that you mentioned. One of the act's requirements is that mines get new closure and closeout plans. And so after the Mining Act was enacted, the company that was operating those mines, which at that time was Phelps Dodge, had to get those plans in place for each of those mines. And we were asked by the Gila Resources Information Project to get involved in that process. We were very fortunate not only to have the Gila Resources Information Project as a client, but also to have an excellent expert, a mining engineer named Jim Kuipers, working with us on that. And we spent a lot of time and effort, and Jim Kuipers and GRIP also spent a lot of time and effort working to get those closure, closeout plans in place. Without the on-the-ground support of the Gila Resources Information Project, we couldn't have done that, and particularly without Mr. Kuipers, we couldn't have done that because he was really an expert in the area of mining, and he could determine, for example, what was necessary to close out a mine and what the amount of a bond would be that would be required to make sure that the mine got cleaned up and closed out if the company was no longer around to do it. We simply were lawyers, and we weren't qualified to be able to make those calculations. On the other hand, as lawyers, we could say, this is what the law requires. This is what's got to be put in place. All right, you tell us, Mr. Kuipers, how much this amounts to or what this actually works out to in terms of details. And so we had quite a good team working on those issues, and I'm glad to say that we did get good results out of those efforts.
And Doug, I think that if I recall correctly, and this, of course, was before my time as executive director of GRIP, but I believe the company's closure closeout plan was something in the vicinity of $100 million. And the plan that Jim Kuipers came up with to do it right was somewhere around $1 billion. And in the end, what was approved was a $500 million in reclamation for the three mines, is my recollection.
I think that's right. I thought that what was approved was a little more than that. I thought it was about $600 million, but I may be remembering that wrong.
Well, we're just rounding anyway, so.
Yeah.
But I think that the point is that it was a great collaborative effort with your legal skills and with Jim Kuiper's technical expertise, and of course, all the community support in Grant County. We were able to achieve a reclamation plan that was of much higher value, to put much more reclamation in place than what the company was willing to do going into the process. So that certainly was a great victory in my book.
I think it was, and it's not the only victory like that that's occurred under the Mining Act. A similar victory did occur with respect to the Molycorp mine in Cuesta. There, the company projected a much lower figure for cleanup and closeout than we believed was, and Jim Kuipers believed was appropriate, and we did end up with a higher, much higher bond, or financial assurance, as it's sometimes called, for that mine's cleanup and closure than the company had proposed. And one of the things about the Mining Act is that because it requires cleanup and closure, and because it requires posting of money so that that will happen, whether or not the mining company can do that closure and cleanup itself, that is, there's money so that the state can do it if the company can't do it, that will prevent in the future incidents like the Animas River spill that occurred not too long ago that involved a mine in Colorado that had not been cleaned up and was the unfortunate result of an accident that occurred when a contractor for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency was trying to clean up that mine. So we're hopeful that the Mining Act itself in New Mexico will prevent that kind of spill from happening in the future.
Yes, that's right. And of course, the Mining Act has been under attack, certainly in the last legislative session, by Freeport-McMoRan and the New Mexico Mining Association. But let's take a short break. We'll be back in a minute, and we'll talk more about water resource protection issues with New Mexico Environmental Law Center Executive Director Doug Micheljohn. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1 FM. This is Allison Civic, Director of the Gila Resources Information Project and your host for today's program. My guest live this morning is Doug Micheljohn, Executive Director of the New Mexico Environmental Law Center, and we're talking about threats to our water supplies here in New Mexico. And Doug, I'm constantly amazed that for such an arid state where more than 90% of New Mexicans rely on groundwater for their drinking water supply, and where we've lost 90% of our riparian habitats, that we don't do a better job at protecting our water resources. Doug, maybe you can give our listeners an overview of some of the major threats to our water supplies here in New Mexico, and we'll talk about how you and others are trying to address these issues.
Certainly, Allison. Well, look, the copper rule, which was adopted by the Martinez administration recently, is one major threat. What the copper rule does is to allow copper mining companies to pollute the groundwater beneath their facilities. Now, it's a little more complicated than that. The pollution can occur within what's called a capture zone, which is the area where the groundwater is being drawn into an open pit, such as the open pits at the copper mines in Grant County. But in the case, for example, of the Tyrone mine in Grant County, that area amounts to an area of approximately 9 square miles. So it's an enormous amount of groundwater. And another threat to groundwater is from commercial dairies.
Okay, hold on. We lost Mr. Micheljohn. We will reconnect him momentarily. I'll just give a little bit more background. It originated coming out of the legislative session in 2009. The legislature passed a bill requiring that the New Mexico Environment Department come up with source-specific rules for the copper mining industry as well as dairies. And so since 2009, that copper rule has been in place. People have been working on the copper rule. It's now currently under appeal at the New Mexico Supreme Court. And this is a pretty important rule from our standpoint here in Grant County. As Doug mentioned, we already have 9 square miles of contaminated groundwater under the 3 Grant County copper mines. And so to allow a rule or to allow mining companies under the copper rule to contaminate even more groundwater under the mines as opposed to preventing contamination is obviously of great concern. And so we're very pleased that the Law Center, on behalf of GRIP, as well as Amigos Bravos up north in Taos, and they, of course, have been working long and hard on the Molycorp mine, and Turner Ranch Properties, which there's a new copper mine, Copper Flats, that's proposed to go in over there by Hillsboro. So all of us have joined forces in this appeal to the New Mexico Supreme Court. So, Doug, are you there?
Yes.
Just gave folks a very brief synopsis of the legislature's mandate back in 2009 to come up with the copper rule. So, and you were in the process of describing what the copper rule actually does. So maybe you can pick up where you left off.
Certainly. Let me first clarify that what the legislature did in 2009 was to mandate that specific rules be adopted for dealing with groundwater pollution caused by copper mines and by dairies. And the legislature did not say to the Water Quality Control Commission, which is the entity that adopts rules for groundwater protection, the legislature didn't say to the commission, this is the rule that you have to adopt. What the legislature said was much more general than that. It just said you need to adopt specific rules dealing with groundwater pollution in the context of these two industries. What the copper rule does is to allow copper mines to pollute groundwater beneath their facilities. It's a little more complicated than that. It's groundwater within what's called a capture zone, which is the area around an open pit copper mine. And the theory is that the groundwater in that area is being drawn into the pit, and therefore the pollution will be contained. Well, there are two problems with that. One is that that's an enormous area. At the Tyrone mine, for example, that's an area that includes approximately 9 square miles. And so under the copper rule, what the state is doing is just writing off 9 square miles of groundwater. That's a lot of groundwater. The second is my understanding, and I'm a lawyer, not a hydrologist, but my understanding is that it's not possible to contain groundwater that way. Groundwater doesn't work that way. Groundwater moves, and it moves in ways that sometimes are predictable and sometimes are not predictable. So the copper rule allows that pollution to occur, and we believe allows pollution to occur in such a way that it is going to spread and pollute more groundwater.
Right. And Doug Mickeljohn, NMED Secretary Ryan Flynn was in Grant County last month trying to lobby locals to support the copper rule. And one of the things he said was that the copper rule is the most protective water quality regulation in the country. Is this an accurate characterization of the copper rule?
It is not. And let me say two things about that. The first is that that statement that the copper rule is the most protective rule in the country simply is not accurate. If we look, for example, at two other states where copper mining occurs, Arizona and Nevada, in Arizona, Arizona law expressly prohibits pollution that may impair present or future uses of groundwater. The copper rule doesn't do that. Arizona also limits the extent of pollution in water. That is, it says that pollution by hazardous substances has to be limited to the footprint of the mine waste dump, and that pollution by non-hazardous substances has to be limited to the area within the mine property or within 750 feet of the pollution source, whichever is smaller. The copper rule doesn't put limits on how far groundwater pollution can spread. In Nevada, the law protects all waters of the state. The copper rule doesn't do that. In Nevada, also, the law requires that groundwater pollution be cleaned up within 30 years. The copper rule allows pollution to remain forever. And so the copper rule, in significant respects, is less stringent than the law in Arizona and Nevada. The second point about that, however, is that what other states are doing or not doing to protect their groundwater really should not dictate what happens in New Mexico. I don't know the percentage of people in Arizona and Nevada who depend on groundwater for their drinking water, but as you pointed out earlier, Allison, in New Mexico, 90% of the people get their drinking water from groundwater. And so whether New Mexico law is or is not more stringent than the law in another state doesn't really deal with the problem of how do we protect the water that is the source of drinking water for almost all of the people in this state. And so that claim, in addition to being inaccurate factually, that claim really is not very relevant.
Right. And so, Doug, the Law Center has been representing GRIP, the Amigos Bravos and Turner Ranch properties in its appeals of the copper rule. Can you tell us where we are in the process of getting the copper rule overturned?
Well, I would not say that we are necessarily going to be able to get the rule overturned, and that's because I happen to be superstitious and I don't believe in predicting optimistically because it usually doesn't work out for me when I do that. But the copper rule was adopted by the Water Quality Control Commission. We appealed that decision of the commission to the New Mexico Court of Appeals. The New Mexico Court of Appeals did not agree with us, and it upheld the copper rule. We then asked the New Mexico State Supreme Court to review the copper rule, and that review is discretionary. The Supreme Court did not have to take up that case. But the Supreme Court did take up that case, and we are currently in the process of filing briefs with the state Supreme Court. We have filed what's called our brief in chief, which sets forth our position. The other side, that is Freeport-McMoRan, which has gotten involved in the case, and the Water Quality Control Commission and the New Mexico Environment Department have until the 30th of December to respond to that brief in chief, and then we will have until February 15th to file what's called a reply, in which we get to address what those parties said in their responses. I should also point out that there are two other parties that are appealing to the state Supreme Court to get the copper rule overruled. One is the New Mexico State Attorney General, Hector Balderas, and the other is a private individual named Bill Olson, who was the head of the State Groundwater Protection Bureau for, I think, a large number of years. I don't know the exact number. He also facilitated a group that negotiated a a version of a copper rule that was not accepted by the upper management at the State Environment Department. So there are, in fact, three different entities appealing to the state Supreme Court.
Right. So sometime then in 2016, maybe the first half of 2016, do we expect a decision from the New Mexico Supreme Court on the copper rule?
It's difficult to predict the timing because there is not a deadline for a decision by the court. But I think that the timing you suggested is probably about right. I would say sometime in the first 6 to 9 months of 2016.
Okay. Well, let's take a break and return for the second half of our show with New Mexico Environmental Law Center Executive Director Doug Micheljohn here on Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM. Don't go away. Welcome back to Earth Matters. This is Allison Sibbick, Director of Gila Resources Information Project, and your host for today's program. We've been talking live with my guest today, Doug Micheljohn, attorney, founder, and executive director of the New Mexico Environmental Law Center. And we've been discussing water quality issues, the copper rule. Let's just finish up, Doug, with a question on the copper rule before we move on. One thing that's interesting to me is the fact that our Grant County mines have been in operation for 34 years under the state's Water Quality Act. And yet, Secretary Ryan Flynn, when he was down here in Grant County a few weeks ago, said that if the New Mexico Supreme Court decided to overturn the copper rule, then there will be more layoffs at the mines, threatening that the Freeport mines would not be able to operate here in Grant County. And, you know, are environmental safeguards the cause of these mine layoffs, or is there something else at play? And I'm just wondering, this is just fear-mongering on the part of the environment secretary to get people to oppose the copper rule.
My understanding, Allison, is that the major factor that determines whether there are layoffs at mines or layoffs in most other extractive industries, for that matter, is the market price of the commodity that's involved. It's not the environmental regulations that apply to whatever the extractive processes are. My understanding is that layoffs at copper mines, layoffs at uranium mines, layoffs at gold mines, layoffs at oil in the oil and gas industry occur primarily because the worldwide price of whatever the commodity is, whether it's oil and gas or uranium or copper, goes down, and there simply isn't as much of a market for that particular commodity, and it therefore is not as economical to produce that particular commodity. It's not my understanding that the environmental safeguards that are put in place are the major factor in causing such layoffs. So again, as with the Secretary of the Environment Department's statement about why New Mexico's copper rule is the most stringent rule in the country, I think his statements as to why copper mines have to lay off people simply are not accurate.
Right. Well, I guess I encourage people to visit the Gila Resources Information Project website, gilaresources.info, and also the Gila Members Community Radio website at gmcr.org, where we'll post links to additional information under the Earth Matters page on the copper rule. We've lost Doug Mickeljohn again, but we'll get him back. Visit us at dealerresources.info and find out more about how you can let your voice be heard with Attorney General Hector Balderas. He's being lobbied heavily by
Freeport Mac Moran and Secretary of the Environment Department, yes, Ryan Flynn, to drop his appeal of the copper rule. Ryan Flynn has told people at a meeting in Santa Clara a few weeks ago that there was overwhelming support for the copper rule here in Grant County and no opposition to the copper rule. Of course, that was not the case for those people who were at public hearings. We all know that there was lots of opposition to the copper rule here in Grant County. So we'll have more information on the gmcr.org Earth Matters website, as well as healaresources.info. I think we've got Doug Mickeljohn back on the line. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay, Doug. So another big pollution source that has gotten its own water quality rule, thanks to the New Mexico legislature, is the dairy industry. And my understanding is that the dairy industry has changed a lot in New Mexico over the past 20 years. And now it's estimated that nearly 60% of the dairies in New Mexico have polluted groundwater. What's going on? What's happening with dairies?
Well, there are two things that are happening that are relevant to pollution by dairies, Allison. The first is that the number of dairies in New Mexico has increased exponentially in recent years, and it is my understanding that that is due at least in part to an influx of dairies that have been subjected to more stringent environmental regulations in other states, particularly California, and have seen New Mexico as a place where there are not stringent environmental regulations, and therefore a place where it's going to be easier and cheaper for those dairies to operate. And so that's one of the factors, is that just the number of dairies, particularly in the southern part of the state and the eastern part of the state, that number has increased a great deal. The second thing is that dairies produce an enormous amount of waste. The cattle in dairies, and we're talking about thousands of cattle, do produce large amounts of urine and manure. And up until recently, that urine and manure has been disposed of in unlined lagoons and has leaked out of those lagoons into the ground below the lagoons and eventually into groundwater. And that's the other reason is for the pollution is just the practice, the way the dairies were operated.
Okay, and my understanding was that the dairy rule, which was finalized, I believe, just this past May, put in place some common sense best management practices to prevent groundwater contamination at dairies. And there was a coalition of environmental groups that worked on getting this rule together. And Doug, maybe you could tell us, how is the new dairy rule protective of groundwater?
Well, the dairy rule that was put in place was the result of efforts, pardon me, by a coalition of groups, including environmental groups and community groups. And we worked with those groups. And my understanding is that one of the basic provisions of the new rule is a provision concerning liners that have to be put in the lagoons where the dairy waste is disposed of. The dairies in the past have not had to dispose of their waste in lined lagoons at all. This rule provides that the dairies can line their lagoons with 2 feet of compacted EPA-approved clay instead of synthetic liners, but that if leaks are detected, then the dairies have to go to synthetic liners. So there is a provision that allows the dairies to do what they wanted to do, which is to put in these clay liners, which I gather are less expensive, but more susceptible to leaking than synthetic liners, which would be plastic liners. But if a dairy is discovered to have caused pollution, and that's detected by groundwater monitoring wells, then the dairy has to change its practice and put in that synthetic liner in whatever lagoon or lagoons are leaking.
Okay, and so certainly sounds like monitoring will be a key thing moving forward in monitoring groundwater at these dairies. And, you know, Doug, I'm curious, since the Law Center was involved in both the copper rule and the dairy rule, you know, what are some of the differences that accounted for these two very different processes and results? I mean, the dairy rule, you've got a rule that is in place now that was a result of, I don't know if it was consensus or compromise, what the best words are, but at least there's no appeal right now of the dairy rule, but yet we've got a copper rule that is far from acceptable to people. What were some of the differences in the processes putting these two rules in place?
Well, I think that there are a couple of major differences. One was that the dairy industry was willing to compromise, and I'm not sure of the exact reason for that. It is my understanding that dairy operators are concerned about protecting the environment because of the liability that they may incur if they don't protect the environment. The second reason, I think, is that the copper mining industry has a lot of sway with the Martinez administration. That is the administration of Governor Susana Martinez. And the copper mining industry has been able to persuade the Martinez administration to do what it wants, that what is what the industry wants in terms of regulating pollution, pardon me, from copper mines. And so the copper mining industry has been able to get, for example, the State Environment Department to go along with it on the copper rule, both the drafting of the copper rule and the enactment of the copper rule in front of the Water Quality Control Commission, whose members are accountable to the Martinez administration. And so I think that's a very big difference, is just the political clout that the copper mining industry has.
Right. Okay. Well, Doug, let's take a short break. Coming up next, we'll talk about water speculation with New Mexico Environmental Law Center's Doug Mickeljohn here on Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Earth Matters here on KURU 89.1. This is Allison Civic of Gila Resources Information Project, and I'm your host for today's program. And we've been talking live with New Mexico Environmental Law Center's Doug Mickeljohn about threats to New Mexico's water resources and how community groups are pushing back on industry and our state regulators to protect our water supplies. Doug Mickeljohn, the New Mexico Environmental Law Center has been on the front lines of fighting against water speculation in New Mexico. And the San Agustin Ranch water rights application is the case we're all watching closely, given the speculative nature of the proposal. And I should say that the Law Center is representing protestants, including the Gila Conservation Coalition, in which my organization, Gila Resources Information Project, is a partner. Doug, tell us more about this application. It's been going on for a while.
Yes, Allison. Pardon me. The application is an application with the New Mexico State Engineer, who is the state official who regulates appropriations of water. And this particular application asks for a permit to extract 54,000 acre feet of groundwater a year from an area that is generally west of Socorro in Socorro and Catron counties, called the San Agustin Basin. And the application, in our view, and in the view of the state engineer who originally heard the application, was flawed because the applicant, that is the Augustan Plains Ranch, did not actually have an end use for the water. What the ranch apparently wanted to do was get the right to extract this water and then put the water up for sale on the open market. That would be speculating, and New Mexico law prohibits speculation in water. That is, if you or I or someone else is going to apply for a permit to use water, whoever is applying has to be able to say, okay, this is what we're going to do with it when we get the permit. That is, we're going to irrigate this land with it, or we're going to use it for this particular domestic use in a subdivision or whatever it is. But there has to be a specific end use for the water. The Augustan Plains Ranch did not have that, and for that reason, when this application was originally filed, we were able to get the state engineer to deny the application. The company appealed that determination to a district court in Socorro. That district court judge upheld the denial, and it's now back, I think, to the point where the company is going to be filing a new application with the state engineer, and I'm not sure exactly what the form of that's going to be, so I don't know exactly where that case is going to go next.
Okay, so I guess bottom line, it doesn't seem like Augustan Plains Ranch has given up in their attempts. It seems like they'll come back to the drawing board. At least that's been the track record here, right, to keep revising their application and addressing concerns and resubmitting their application.
That's my understanding, yes.
Okay. Well, so, you know, it seems to me like water grabs, like the San Agustin Ranch application and even the Gila River diversion issue, pit rural areas against urban areas. And I'm wondering, are there any legal mechanisms that help protect rural areas from these speculative water projects?
Well, I think that the major protection is the anti-speculation doctrine. That is, one of the possible uses of this water that was mentioned by the applicant who was trying to get the water from the San Agustin Basin was possibly selling it to a city. Maybe that would have been Albuquerque, maybe it would have been Santa Fe, maybe it would have been El Paso, but the ranch didn't have a particular contract with a particular city to use the water in that city. And so I think that is a major protection.
We lost Doug Mickeljohn again. We were just talking about the speculative nature of the San Agustin Ranch application. And of course, I really feel like the Gila River Diversion Project is a similar situation in which it's very speculative. For those who have been tracking the Gila River Diversion Project, here we are after 10 plus years of planning, and we still don't have end water users for the Gila River Diversion Project. So it seems extremely speculative. We don't know where the water is going to. We don't know how much it's going to cost. We don't know how much it's going to cost end users. So it seems to me like the Gila River Diversion Project fits the perhaps the anti-speculation doctrine. Doug, do we have you back?
Yes.
Okay. Doug, take it away where you left off. You were talking about the anti-speculation doctrine.
Yes, the idea is that if one is going to appropriate water, and that is, if an individual or a company is going to do that, the individual or company has to be able to say specifically, this is what we're going to use the water for. And one important point to remember about water in New Mexico is that individual people and companies cannot own water. All water is owned by the public. What an individual or a company can get is a permit to use the water, but one cannot appropriate any amount of groundwater and then just put it up on the open market for sale. One has to have a particular use in mind in order to be able to get the right to use that water.
Right. I was saying when we lost you there that the Gila River Diversion Project seems like it might fit the anti-speculation doctrine, since we still don't have any end users, don't know where the water's going. Is it going to be used for municipal use, agricultural use? Do you see any similarities in the Gila River diversion issue and the San Agustin issue? I know they are different, maybe in the sense of, you know, where the water right itself, where those water rights are coming to, but still it seems like they're similar in this speculative nature of them.
I think, Allison, that I'm not really familiar enough with the Gila River diversion proposal to be able to answer that question in detail. It does seem to me that there is a good argument along the lines of what you are saying, but I think that the stage that where at which that proposal is now is not a stage where they're actually talking about we want to appropriate this water. My understanding is that what's going on right now is simply the question about whether or not a diversion should be constructed. As I understand it, the question about what that water would be used for would be dealt with later when people apply to try to get some of that water, or maybe it's not people, maybe it's cities, I'm not sure.
Right, right. And the other thing I heard about, and maybe you can set me straight if this isn't true, that Santalina has the big, huge development in Albuquerque is being touted as sort of the user for this San Agustin Plains water. Is that still being talked about?
Our office represents a number of entities that are trying to stop the proposed Santalina development, and we have heard that rumor, but we have nothing concrete to indicate that that is, in fact, accurate. The Santalina development, for the benefit of your listeners who are not familiar with it, is a proposed development that at full build-out, which would take somewhere around 50 years, would be home to 90,000 people on the West Mesa of Albuquerque. And there are a lot of questions about that development. One of them, certainly one of the leading questions, is where's the water going to come from? And there really isn't a satisfactory answer to that at this point.
Doug Micklejohn, thank you so much for talking with us today about the work that you do at the New Mexico Environmental Law Center and these important precedent-setting cases. And thank you for your hard work to protect New Mexico's water supplies. That's all the time we have today. Thank you to our audio engineer, Kyle Johnson. For a podcast of today's program, visit the Earth Matters program page online at gmcr.org. We hope you'll join us again for next week's edition of Earth Matters here on Gila Members Community Radio 89.1 FM.